Welcome to the Global Research News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman, brought to you by globalresearch.ca. Please visit the site and take note that the Global Research is totally dependent on listeners for support, for readers for support, and of course listeners to this program as well, because the two go hand in hand, one in print and this on air, and always covering the most important topics that people need to know about and providing real information. And today on the News Hour is no exception. I'm delighted to have back Catherine Austin Fitz. Catherine is an investment advisor, an entrepreneur. She's a former assistant HUD commissioner under Senior Bush and a former managing director and board member of the Wall Street firm Dillon Reed & Company, Inc. Catherine now is the editor of Solari.com, and she runs Solari, Inc., which is an online company focused on ethical investment and preservation of family wealth. And Catherine also hosts the topic of today's program. She hosts a three times a month Solari Report. It's a one-hour conference call by subscription that exposes how we're being tricked, what to do to protect ourselves. Catherine is an expert, and she explains what's going on and how it affects our money and our health and our safety, and most important, what we can do about it. Catherine, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me back. It's great to be back.
Oh, it's terrific having you back. One comment yesterday. Oh, I had a terrible thing happen to me. I noticed that I hadn't been connected on air at top of the hour, and when I picked up my phone, I discovered it was dead.
What happened?
My phone died on me. Oh, my goodness. I couldn't even call anybody to tell them because I don't have a cell phone. Anyway, my neighbor rescued me, and I got on here a few minutes late and had a great discussion about the global economy with Bob Chapman.
Uh-huh.
So my neighbor gets credit for yesterday's program. But today everything is fine. I had a wonderful repair person who said, oh, you won't have this problem again. Well, hopefully. But anyway, we want to talk about the Solari report. If you remember last time, we have a few commercial breaks, one coming up in a minute. But why don't you start, and then we'll take a break when the music comes on and pick it right up again.
Okay.
I'll let you start, Catherine, explaining the Solari report.
Oh, sure. What happened, you know, it's funny. We always back into these things that we do. I got so many requests to and when any event would occur, what does this mean? What does this mean? And so I finally decided I would do a blog so that I could do something very timely where I just post, response to the current events, particularly in the financial markets. And that got going, and I started getting more and more questions, and finally everybody said, well, you know, I mean, literally, can you find a way to tell us what's really going on? And I was literally on the phone with so many clients every week just sort of responding to what was going on. Finally, I said, okay, we need a better way to do this, and I started the Solari Report, which is, it's an hour by phone three times a month. And what I do is I have a section called Money and Markets where I just go over what happened that week, what was important, and explain sort of the deeper story behind the news. And I'll explain when we get back.
Okay, Catherine, we'll take a short break and come back and get into it. I'm eager to get into some of the details as well. We'll be right back.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome back to the News Hour. On with Catherine Austin Fitz, talking about her Solari report. Catherine, let me let you pick up and continue where you left off.
The other thing we, so the first thing we do is we really cover the deeper news of what's going on. And in the financial market, Stephen, when you watch the financial news, it's very easy to fall into what I call monkey mind, which is to respond to lots of different, you know, prices up, prices down, little headlines, and not really see the game behind the, you know, behind the different headlines. So the second section is called Ask Catherine, where people, I get lots of questions, and I just respond to the ones that are the most. There's a process for subscribers to post questions and then vote on the ones they most want to get answered. And then finally, we have different, really different people come and talk about different things. For example, every once a month we do the precious metals update with Franklin Sanders, who's a precious metals dealer that I work with a fair amount, and cover, you know, cover precious metals or other parts of the market in depth. And then the last and one of the most fun for me is called Let's Go to the Movies. I discovered about 10 years ago that many of my family and friends wanted to know what is really going on, but they didn't begin to have the time to read a lot of books or consume a lot of written material that was really necessary if they're going to understand. And so what I realized is, you know, it's really all in the movies. You just need to be able to explain to people what part of the movies is fact and what part is fiction. I always say in America that fiction is fact and fact is fiction. So I discovered that I could literally tell them, look, stop watching all TV news and corporate news.
Oh, absolutely.
And I want you to just watch these 20 movies, and here's what you need to know about each of them. So we have a section called Let's Go to the Movies, where we use movies and documentaries to help people, again, see the system. And my real goal is to help protect people from economic warfare. I want them to see the game so that they can navigate it, number one. That they can stay in a state of amusement, because there's so much effort to terrorize people and get them to kind of give up and let go. So I want them to be able to be happy, you know, as they navigate the game. And the third thing is I want them to know how to protect and grow their assets even in this environment. So, and the Solari Report for me is so much fun because, you know, I get to jump on the phone and just do everything I can for an hour to help people see what's going on in a way that, you know, they can, and I come back to the word navigate. They can really navigate it and not get tricked.
Catherine, so. I can't imagine another time in my life, in my mid-70s, no other time. I was a kid. I was born during the Depression, but, you know, a kid knows nothing. And I never felt it. Whatever hardship my parents went through, they never showed it. They never let on. They never showed it to me. So it seemed like normal times to me. But certainly in my adult life, this is by far the most challenging time, by far, absolutely by far that I've lived through. And who can tell what lies ahead, not just in the shorter or intermediate term, but a regular on this program, Bill Engdahl, who does some terrific writing.
Yeah, he published a new article that's fabulous.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And every time he comes out with a new one, I consider it must reading. And he's got a new book that just came out, and I'm writing about it. And Bill will be on the program on the 22nd of June, a week from this coming Monday. We'll talk about his book and whatever else is on his mind, but he sees a dark decade ahead, which means this will be the most challenging time for most anyone to figure out how to keep yourself above water and not being dragged down in what may be a terrible economic undertow. So your program is ammunition to do it.
Yeah, the interesting thing is there's no reason for the economy to be in a bad state. I mean, that's the funny thing about it.
Oh, I agree.
We don't have an economic problem. We have a political problem. And unfortunately, you know, sometimes I'll call the current economy the tapeworm economy.
Mm-hmm.
The way a tapeworm functions in your body is it injects in you a chemical that makes you crave what's good for the tapeworm and bad for yourself. And literally, if you watch our society, we are we are essentially, we have a parasite. You know, if anything, you might even describe it as spiritual, but we have a tremendous number of people acting in ways which are destructive of the economy. You know, to put it bluntly, a lot of us make money by doing something that harms somebody else. And so you literally have a spiral down, if you will, where more and more of us every day, you know, try to earn our living by doing something that targets or harms somebody else. And there are no solutions without everyone saying, look, you know, one, we're not going to behave in that manner. You know, so I'm going to come clean. I'm going to try and do something that's useful to everybody else. And that's number one. And number two says, look, if you're going to try and do things that are harmful to other people, you know, then frankly, I don't want to know you. I'm going to avoid you.
Well, I have that feeling. And it also bothers me, Catherine, that I run into intelligent people, some people very intelligent, responsible jobs, in some cases retirees. And to put it bluntly, they simply don't have a clue as to what's going on. How it harms them personally or people around them, their families, their loved ones, whatever. And they just go merrily along their way day after day and have no idea that there are things we ought to be thinking about, we ought to know about, we ought to be doing. And this is what you spend so much time on. So Solari Report is one. And you talk a lot about getting out of the destructive system. So And I sure agree. Don't support these predator banks, for one thing.
Right,
you support
really
the idea of local community, local, and you've got activities related to that as well.
Well, it's very if there's a system that literally needs victims, what you want to do is you want to stay as far away from it as possible because you don't want to be the victim. And you know, it's really a matter of time as to when. You know, because this is a system that needs victims to function. It requires victims to be sustainable. So, part of it is withdrawing. So get the one thing is to look at your time and your money and in each part of your life, get as far away from people who behave this way as possible. So, of course, first one is get out of the banks that look like they're behaving in a criminal manner and get into, if you can, find a good local bank or credit union. Before you even get into your money, you've got to think about your mind. So turn off. I have not owned a television since 1984.
Oh, my goodness.
And, well, I had a decorator once who bought a TV for me when I worked in the administration. I came home and there was a TV and I said, why did you do that? And he said, you can't be assistant secretary of acting without a television.
You might be on the evening news gathering.
Right.
You'd want to see what they're saying about you.
Right. So as soon as I left the administration, I gave it away. I gave it to somebody as a present. And so I literally have not, other than that, I have not had a television.
Well, you like and, Ralph Nader. He has a screenless home or apartment where he lives. No computer, which is really surprising. Anyway, continue.
Well, I can't imagine. I mean, it would be wonderful, but I can't imagine functioning without a computer.
Oh, I simply can't imagine it either. Yet I spent a good many years without one, and once I had one, I felt like my entire life before that I hadn't been breathing, and now now oxygen has come into my life.
Right.
I can't get by without it.
So you know, so get them out of your mind, and if you watch any corporate news. Just understand that news is designed, you know, it's not data, it's propaganda, and it's designed to advantage whoever ultimately is behind that news. And if you look at how many people are being paid to literally push propaganda, it's absolutely astounding. So the first thing you need to do is get your mind clean and find sources of information and news that really serve to help you understand how the world really works in a way that you can use your time and money to get what it is, you know, your mission and goal in life is.
Yeah,
so
I think you have a very receptive audience to the listeners of this program.
Oh, of course, because they're getting, you know, they're getting what I call the real deal.
Oh, they're getting the real deal. They know that you cannot turn on your TV set and get anything legitimate. The most important stuff is never reported, and the stuff that is reported, as you say, is propaganda. There's a lot of distraction.
Well,
there's a lot of junk news.
Yeah, the thing that is my greatest concern with TV, and it's my concern with any online, you know, information, is including computers. Is when I was on Wall Street in 1984, I overheard a conversation that I wasn't supposed to hear, and it was about what I now call subliminal programming and entrainment technology on television, and it just scared me to death. And that's when I came home, and that was it for me and TV. TV was out. And, you know, I don't begin to understand that technology. I've tried to find scientists who can explain it to me. But you're talking about extraordinarily powerful, you know, techniques and electronics that really manipulate people. And I've experienced them in speeches that, you know, where I've seen them used. And this stuff is really dangerous stuff, and it's having an impact.
Oh, it's having a big impact. I think if we could resurrect Sigmund Freud, Catherine, he would be aghast at what is going on. And say, well, I never could have imagined anything like this. It is very sophisticated. They're very good at what they do.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's take another break, and we'll be right back.
This is RVN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back to the News Hour. On with Catherine Austin Fitz. Let me just explain to listeners, Catherine, it's very simple to find your website, your blog, and information on the Solari Report. The easiest way for me always is just Google Solari Report. It just brings it right up immediately.
Yeah.
And you have some sample audio excerpts. And just looking at one that certainly is strikes me as something that anybody would want to listen to on money and markets. And you mentioned that you called the housing bubble in 1998, and you saw the rising gold price in 2001, and you constantly refer to a slow burn in the economy that we're certainly going through right now. Got a little fast last autumn.
Well, you know, it's I've been talking about the slow burn for over a decade, and it first started because I kept running into people who were saying, you know, the whole economy, the whole global financial system is going to crash. And I kept coming back and said, no, it's not. It's not going to crash. This is and I call it the slow burn, which is a really managed process of where insiders keep their system afloat by parasiting outsiders. And you know, and it's a managed process where absolutely some people go down, you know, so there's a global financial meltdown from the point of view of a select number of people who are this week's victim. But it's, you don't get the kind of crashes, and the market doesn't adjust through price, it adjusts through events. So it looks like we're going to have a global financial crisis, and of course that doesn't happen. We have 9/11. And, you know, we go to Afghanistan, and Afghanistan goes from being a tiny percentage of the heroin market to 80% of the heroin market.
Oh, indeed.
Right. And so, you know, so we have these different events which give another round of food to the tapeworm. And it's so I call it the slow burn, and it's really a combination of the outsiders experience deflation of income and inflation of expenses. And, you know, in many cases, it's very subtle until, as you said last fall, we get a period when we get a big chunk down in asset prices. But make no mistake about it, that chunk down in asset prices is a tremendous opportunity for a variety of people. We've just, you know, it took the entire history of our republic to accumulate $12 trillion in national debt. And in a year, literally, this new administration in Congress has given or lent the banks through the Treasury, the central bank, $12 trillion or more. So, I mean, it's quite extraordinary.
It's inconceivable, Catherine. It's inconceivable to be talking about numbers like this, but what you're saying is exactly so, and we talk about it on this program. I just shake my head in disbelief. It seems like Alice in Wonderland to me.
Well,
anyway.
Crime that pays is crime that stays. And this country has grown up around a capital accumulation. You know, the way we've gathered capital to build multinational corporations and literally build an empire is through organized crime. After World War II, we opened up all of our markets to hard narcotics trafficking in a big way, and that's been very successful in terms of building huge pools of capital. I mean, the margins on a combination of hard narcotics trafficking and money laundering is just fantastic, not just the businesses itself, but if you look at the economics of how that money then allows you to take over a local retail and other market with the money that you make in that community. So think of this as neighborhood leverage buyouts. We haven't just been doing leverage buyouts of businesses. We've been doing leverage buyouts of local community, you know, sort of market share. You bring drugs in and make enough money along. You lever it with mortgage fraud, and then you use that money, you know, to bring in franchises and other businesses. And eventually, you know, you buy the neighborhood with its own money.
And then you move from one neighborhood to another, to another, to another. And
right.
And it's a huge, illicit drugs is such a huge business. I've seen estimates, I guess all we can have are estimates. The people involved don't publish financial statements. we don't know exactly.
Well, actually, the people who involved do publish financial statements.
Oh.
I'll give you a perfect example. RJ, when I was at Dillon Reed, one of our biggest accounts was, clients was RJR Nabisco, and RJR was a tobacco company, and you probably read the stories of their purchase of Nabisco and the whole, there was a big takeover war in the late 80s to take over RJR Nabisco. Anyway, the European Union lawsuit, European Union on behalf of 11 sovereign nations of Europe, filed a lawsuit against RJR Nabisco alleging money laundering using cigarettes on behalf of the Latin American drug cartels, the Russian mafia, on and on and on. And if you look at the dates in the story told in the lawsuit, it relates to the period when KKR was the big leveraged buyout firm, was the essentially owner of RJR Nabisco, and Lou Gerstner, who later became the chairman of IBM and then chairman of the Carlyle Group in Washington, was the head of the company. And it's very detailed. You know, it's better than reading a Tom Clancy novel. It's a real primer on how you use a consumer good to launder drug and other money.
Oh, yeah, and of course the banks are notorious at laundering drug money. My comment related to what one of the crime families may do in their businesses. They for sure do not have financial statements.
but this stuff is getting laundered through big corporations.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
Welcome back to the News Hour. I'm on with Catherine Austin Fitz. Catherine, I've got one quick question, and then I thought listeners would be interested in what you discussed on a recent Solari report and maybe a few pressing questions that listeners had on their mind. But my quick question is, you're working on a book. I think you're getting close to finishing it. What's the title, and do you have an idea when it will be published?
Coup d'etat, one insider story of how dirty money rules our life and what you can do about it.
Oh, I can't wait to read that.
I published, the core of the book is published already as an article on the internet. I put up a special website. It's, if you want to read it, it's called Dillon Reed and the Aristocracy of Stock Profits. And it tells the story of in the 1990s, Steve, we knew that the American middle class was in real trouble. A decision had been made to deindustrialize America. Tremendous amounts of jobs in manufacturing were moved abroad, and there was a globalization process going on. And that meant that either the baby boomer generation needed to pay down their debt, improve their skills, and do a series of things that would really help them adjust to this process and sort of, you know, stay on top of changing economic times is really what it was. And I was part of a group of people in Washington. I had a company in Washington at the time named Hamilton Securities Group. And it was, I came out of the Bush administration saying, oh, this is an emergency. You know, people really have to change and really have to know that there's a, you know, there's this tsunami, economic tsunami coming at us. And the big core issue was, how do we make sure that the pension funds get sufficient yield for the boomer retirement? And how do we do it? And to do that, Steve, you really had to radically improve the financial performance of government investment. The financial performance of government investment was terrible and getting worse every day. And so I came out, you know, came out of the Bush administration, things an emergency. Anyway, we started this company and did tremendous work in figuring out what was really going on in the economies in terms of how it affected communities and households, and how we could change government investment to help the middle class and the pension funds sort of jump the curve on the whole situation. And did tremendous research, came forward with plans on how to do it, and ran into enormous political opposition, because literally a decision was made to do the opposite of what we needed to do, which was, instead of helping people pay down their debt and improve their skills, it was to do the opposite, bubble the economy with a whole series of consumer debt that would encourage people to spend money on things that would, you know, that were basically consumption as opposed to savings. And this decision was accompanied by getting rid of the people who were promoting transparency of government investment and performance in government investment. And we were targeted in, have you ever seen the movie Enemy of the State?
I'm not certain that I have.
It's a movie with Gene Hackman and Will Smith. Will Smith's a very successful lawyer in Washington. And he's targeted by a covert operation and a smear campaign, and literally sort of, you know, driven out. And that's exactly what happened to me. It was right out in the movies. And because you couldn't afford to have transparency of the mortgage market, there was so much fraud going on, and the fraud just grew tremendously, as we now all know. And so you literally had a financial coup d'etat. There was $4 trillion went missing from the federal government. And it was almost as though the leadership of Wall Street in Washington had a psychotic episode and said, we're going to steal everything. I mean, we're basically going to end constitutional government as we know it in America. And one of the ways we're going to do it is by stealing all the money, you know, and by the time everybody figures out, it's going to be too late. And the criminal behavior just skyrocketed. It was unbelievable. And I left Washington and went on the road to try and warn my family and friends. And literally, no one could believe me. No one could believe me that this was really happening. And it was really not until last year that the majority of my friends and family and the broad section of people that I deal with came back and said, oh my God, you're right. You know, it's funny. We oftentimes, we can see the machinery steal and destroy from others, and we think we're protected and we don't think it's coming our way. But of course, it's like a cancer. And so ultimately it has to eat through everything that's healthy.
Oh, very much so, Catherine. I think one comment that I heard you make once, explains at least part of this. Once when you were in Indonesia, an Indonesian cab driver asked you something like, why do you let Goldman Sachs run your country or run your government?
Right. It's actually wasn't me. It was another banker. But it's when you go, when you I travel a lot, and so when you're in Asian Europe, at a distance, so many people see this. But I think it's more frightening for Americans. So much money is used. The COINTELPRO programs of old are still with us, and so much money and time is used on control and targeting Americans who don't go along. So it's dangerous, and I think whether it's conscious or subconscious, people understand the dangers. And, you know, you used to always hear people say, well, it's a free country. You never hear anybody say it's a free country now. So I think people are afraid to buck the system, and that's why it's so important to have good information about how the system works, because it's with that, you know, all political power depends on the suppression of knowledge in this system.
Well, I think
so
the more
you can just know what's going on and arm yourself with that knowledge, again, I get back to the word navigate. Now, I wanted to ask you, tell me, how much time have you spent in Chicago?
Oh, I've lived here nearly 40 years now.
Where do you live?
It's not my home city. I was born in Boston.
You were born in Boston. Where do you live vis-a-vis the 49th Ward?
I live... My actual street address?
How far do you live from the 49th Ward? How well do you know the 49th Ward of Chicago?
I have a confession to make. I get very confused on these numbers.
Uh-huh.
I live in a community called Streeterville.
Uh-huh.
Streeterville. And I would have to double check to see what number of
ward
I live in.
Okay, the 49th Ward is Rogers Avenue, Beach, and Park.
I think that's way north. That's way north of me, I think.
Right. Leon Park and Beach, Loyola Park, that whole area along the waterfront.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, I just did a series on my blog, and this is what we're talking about on the last Solari report, on a project that's going on in Chicago's 49th Ward. Okay? And I'd love to have an opportunity to talk with you about it right now.
Oh, absolutely. Let's go ahead. And I will say to you, Catherine, that not too many weeks back, I wrote an article about Chicago. I have certainly mentioned my glorious mayor and administration and his father, that between the two of them, the dailies, between the two of them,
uh-huh.
have run the city of Chicago for roughly the last 40 of the last 50 years or so.
Uh-huh.
I mean, talk about a dynasty. And if my article got into the mayor's office, and if he or anybody around him read it, I am certain that I am absolutely persona non grata, and that's the good news.
Uh-huh.
maybe the police will come knocking on my door one day or greet me on the streets of Chicago. I did not have anything good to say about how this city is run. Especially under the leadership of the dailies. But I'm interested in what you're going to tell me.
Well, I want to talk let's go back. Have you read Naomi Klein's book, The Shock Doctrine?
Oh, I read it and I wrote about it.
Great book.
Oh, it is.
And what it describes is a process by which a local economy is exploited by this parasitic process. And what she describes is academics going in and coming up with plans that then advantage outside investors, you know, who are part of essentially the syndicate. And, in fact, she talks about the Chicago Boys, so it's appropriate that we're talking about Chicago. And one of the things that I write a lot about and will be in the book Financial Coup d'Etat is this process of economic warfare. You target, you target a local economy, which could be a nation, so it could be a country, and you pull the credit, you devastate the economy, then you bring in academic experts, and they recommend a whole lot of radical proposals that then allow you to pick up companies and land and different assets for cheap. So it's a way of buying a place and buying it for cheap, but using all sorts of smart experts to justify what you're doing and make it look sort of socially acceptable. And Ann Williamson was a brilliant reporter for the Wall Street Journal who went into Russia after the 90s and really brought transparency to what was going on. And it ended up, in fact, with a lawsuit against Harvard University, who in that instance was the academic, but you had the Harvard Endowment. Of course, many of these big universities are really investment syndicates, you know, that behind the air cover of a tax exemption. And so you had the Harvard Corporation Endowment making a fortune as their experts were basically proposing that all the assets of the company be stripped. And it's really an asset stripping. You go in and you harvest the land, the businesses, the oil, the natural resources. So Ann Williamson documented it in Russia. Then you had Greg Palast do a great job, and then Naomi Klein of documenting it in Latin America, other people documenting it in Eastern Europe. But you literally saw this tapeworm process, a parasite, running around the world and basically picking up assets for cheap by pulling the plug on the credit and, you know, sort of or financing of these different countries. You know, and this game, Steve, was unbelievably profitable and got worse and worse and worse and worse. And my question when I wrote the Dylan Reed story is, you know, is this about to happen in America? I'll never forget, I was at an investment conference in London in 2001, and I gave a paper called The Myth of the Rule of Law, which is about sort of asset stripping of American communities, this drug and mortgage fraud game, and how much money was being drained by communities by the mortgage fraud. And I gave the paper, and Ann Williamson, it was when I first met her, she gave a paper on what was happening in Russia, and then I gave the paper on what was happening in the United States. And a wonderful reporter in London, John Laughlin, gave a paper on what was happening in Eastern Europe, and we were stunned because what we realized was it was the same investors. It was the same universities. It was the same syndicate that was basically doing this all around the world. I know I once had a meeting in 1990, it was 98 or 99, a group of peasant women from Bolivia, Colombia, and Peru came to America to lobby Congress. It was a Quaker group in Philadelphia that brought them to tell them, look, the war on drugs is making things worse, not better in our countries. We were spending America aid through the State Department was spending a fortune to build the war on drugs, which is making things worse. And so these women described to a group of people the process by which peasants were moved off the land was picked up cheap by a variety of parties, government money was used to build sort of HUD kind of housing in these countries, you know, a whole process of using the war on drugs for corporate interests and private interests to pick up land cheap and get a variety of government contracts. So I started to ask them money about how the money worked, and finally one of them looked at me and said, you know, she said, Senorita, you say you have never been to our countries, but you know everything about how the money works. How is this possible? You know, she was looking at me like I was from the CIA. And I said, you know, I don't know anything about your countries, but I used to be Assistant Secretary of Housing in this country, and apparently it works exactly in your countries the way it works here. It was the same game. Well, I later found out that the firm that had the contract for the State Department to lead the knowledge management, sort of the investment strategy, as you will, for the war on drugs, I think it was a $600 million contract, was the same firm that had a lead enforcement role for the Department of Housing and Urban Development. So, you know, it was literally the government was paying the same people. So we have this model of using of basically economic warfare against a place that subsidizes ownership and control of literally trillions of dollars of assets and businesses, Steve. Anyway, so one of my questions is this what's going to happen in America? Because we have state and local governments that have incredible assets. We have state parks, city parks, all sorts of land. You know, there are utility businesses, and we still have, despite all the financial shenanigans of the last two decades, we still have significant assets sitting on the balance sheets of these entities. Well, in the 90s, in this story that I wrote, Dylan Reed, I tell the story of a private prison investment by my old company on Wall Street, Dillon Reed. And I talk about how the money on that prison investment works in comparison to what's really going on in communities and who's making money on the narcotics. And I include the story of the European Union lawsuit against RJR Nabisco, which was one of Dillon Reed's biggest accounts. So here you have Dillon Reed and his partners making all this money helping RJR Nabisco buy companies. If the European Union is right, then apparently what we're doing was helping them reinvest their drug profits or their money laundering profits. And then the partners turn around and use some of this money to then finance a private prison company that makes money, you know, putting young people away who've been targeted with the drugs that RJR Nabisco is and their syndicates and their allies are helping to bring in. And so when you look at the true economics of the game, the wrong people are going to jail, if you will.
Well, there's no question about that, Catherine.
Right.
I've written some on what you're discussing as well, and you can bring it right down to the city and community level. I've written a little about some of the stuff going on right here in Chicago, which is so outrageous, innocent people being harmed because the city government and the predators that you're talking about are just exploiting them brutally. I fully expect to see this continue, and I use the phrase that I worry for people that America is slowly being turned into Guatemala.
Well, let's turn it around.
We have to turn it around. Right now, we have to take a break. We'll come back for a last segment, Catherine, and we'll wrap it up with your final thoughts, especially on Solari Report.
Okay.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back to the News Hour, a final segment with Catherine Austin Fitz. Catherine, it never ceases to amaze me on the corporate media, despite all the rubbish they turn out when it comes to what they call news. They give it to you in sound bites. Here, we're spending a whole hour on this vital information that we're discussing, and it's not enough. When this program ends, I feel the same way each time. My goodness, we're breaking it off in the middle of a point, and if we only had a second hour to just keep going on this. And at the second hour, I feel the same way. I mean, we just need to keep going. You can't explain this thing in short segments anyway.
Well, you can.
Well, you can explain a lot, but you get into detail.
You can't explain enough so that somebody knows how to protect themselves. But over time, people can learn. So I'm optimistic. I do want to point out, I've got a series up on my blog about an operation that's occurring in the Chicago 49th Ward. It's called Financial Ecosystems, Part 1, Part 2, Part 3.
Mm-hmm.
And I really encourage you to read it because there's something going down in Chicago, and it's very important that we understand it, look at it, and see if we can't turn it around. Because we've got a team coming to Chicago to do something called participatory budgeting in the 49th Ward. And participatory budgeting actually is a very good idea that came out of the problems in Latin America where citizens got together and started to work together to do the municipal budgets. And the challenge is, do they look at just what the current resources are in the municipality, or do they look at where all the money's really gone over the last 10 years and how we got into the situation we got into? And it's a perfect example of the power of knowledge to really shift the game. So I want you to take a look at that. And,
absolutely, Kevin. The title again is what?
Financial Ecosystems, Part 1, 2, and 3.
And it's on your blog.
It's on my blog, and it's something that you and I really need to talk about.
Oh, well, I am very, very interested. I would be interested in any city, but especially my own, Catherine. And
uh-huh.
I would just say to you, if there's anything I can do to help on this, I absolutely want to. So let's talk about it. We can join in taking aim at
Well, I don't think we, I think all you want to do is you, first you want to bring transparency. You know, my father was a surgeon and the, and it's really important not to operate until you know what's going on. And there's nothing like transparency to shift something. And so I think you bring transparency to this situation and you have no idea how many wonderful things might be able to happen.
Oh, that is the beginning. I mean, you, sunshine is a wonderful disinfectant, Catherine, as you know.
Right, especially because there's a ton of money around. In other words, everybody thinks we have no money, but of course, if you as you and I know, if you behave in an unproductive manner, then there's never enough money. If everybody will change and behave in a productive manner, there's plenty. So, the reason to bring transparency to what's happening in an economy is because then there is the possibility to change in a way that there really are enough resources.
Oh, there's no question about that. It's as you know, it's not rocket science to get it right and do the right thing. I guess it takes a real genius to get it all wrong, and they fine tune their methods over the years. So, you know, you start, well, I don't know when you start, but you got the Federal Reserve in 1913, and they got worse and worse as they honed their skills through the
right,
decades.
The root problem is if you allow private banks to issue your currency and control your financial data, then there are no solutions.
Oh, absolutely, yes. And I'm afraid I have to end it, Catherine, because that music says... we're going to the next program. Catherine, it's terrific having you on.
Thanks.
I welcome you anytime. You have an open door on this program. I guarantee you that. And I've got the financial ecosystems up. I'll read it, and I'll make a couple of comments.